to the dream home. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't realise that it's called a property ladder for a reason. And that's because if you want to get to the dream home, quite often you've got to make a few strategically planned house moves that will enable you to buy the dream house. And it's kind of like that with us, I think, that God places within us gifts and talents and skills and dreams and purposes and plans. And we all have them. We all have things that we think, yeah, that's where I want to be. And quite often where we are in reality to what we've got in his heart and what God's put before us seems so far apart. And our spiritual budget doesn't seem to get us to where we need to be. But what I want us to do this morning is not discourage us from looking at the bigger picture and seeing where God's taking us, but to actually look at the place that we're in at the minute. To not sort of despise it, but to see the potential of where you are. To see the purpose of this moment, this step, this place. Because that, when you learn what God wants in that step, then you're going to move to the next step. And then eventually, God's bigger picture and purposes and plans for your life, you'll see come to pass. And so there's many different people in the Bible that we can look at and learn from who had to take smaller steps in what we know was a much bigger picture and a bigger purpose that God had. So the first person I'd like to look at is Esther. And most of us will know the story of Esther and how she became queen. And she was instrumental in saving the Jewish people. But prior to that, I'm running out of space here. Prior to that, she'd been known as Hadassah. And she'd got no parents because she'd lost both of her parents. And so her cousin, Mordecai, had brought her up as his own. And Mordecai's family had been carried into exile from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. And so this is a family that have encountered difficult times, being taken from what's familiar, and particularly for Esther losing both her parents. So I'd like to just read from Esther chapter 2, verse 8 to 9. I'll put my clever glasses on, you're going to think I'm right clever now. So in verse 8 and 9 it says this: when the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many girls were brought to the citadel of Susa and put under the care of Hegai. Esther also was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Hegai, who had charge of the harem. The girl pleased him and won his favour, and immediately he provided her with beauty treatments and special food. He assigned to her 7 maids selected from the king's palace and moved her and her maids into the best place in the harem. So to be honest, I don't think that sounds too bad, does it? Being positioned in a palace and given her own maids. Oh, I would love that. And provided with beauty treatments. And here's the deal, special food. I'd be straight in there, be loving that. And I think, to be fair, I think God should position more of us in palaces. Could you imagine that, turning up at Buckingham Palace? Sorry, Your Highness, you need to move to East Wing, love, because ladies from Rotherham Ealing are moving in. Could you imagine what she'd think? I think she'd be mortified, really. And although I think at that time the culture, that this was acceptable and it may have been considered an honour, I think that would have been very scary for any young girl to be taken from a family and what's familiar and what you know and placed somewhere completely different. And I think that although I would have been scared, I think Esther would have been scared. And I think that although she was scared, I think she was prepared, because she'd already been through scary. She'd already lost both her parents and had to adjust to a completely new living arrangement. And I think it's hard. I know for me, I went and lived with my auntie for a year before me and Jim got married, because my mum and dad had moved out of the area. You know, and it's not that she weren't my family. She was my auntie. She cooked brilliant meals. She did all my washing and ironing. But it was still scary, because I felt like I had to be on my best behaviour. It weren't my mum and dad, it's different. It just feels different. But Esther, you know, she'd already done this. So moving into the palace, I think she was prepared to some degree for that. And we go on to read that she went through various beauty treatments for about a period of 12 months before she was considered ready to go and see the king. And then when she finally did go to see the king, she won his favour and he made her his queen. And as the story unfolds, we see, because of the book, the Bible, a bigger picture more clearly. And God certainly had a plan to use Esther's influence to save the Jewish people from death. And what we need to remember is that there were different steps in this story and in the plan that God had. And although it seems difficult, there was a purpose in everything that Esther went through. And there was a purpose in her being under the care of her cousin. And there was, and God was able to prepare her and strengthen her through her loss. And he was able to prepare her for moving from a familiar situation and home life into a new situation because she'd already been through it. And there was a purpose in the position that Mordecai held at the king's gate, and so that he could uncover a plot to kill the king. And it all sort of fits in, as you read through Esther, to a much bigger picture. And God can cause you to be promoted and hold important positions and influential positions, even within difficult places and places of what seems like exile, and that seem unlikely to have a purpose to them. And as a child of God, you carry more purpose and influence than you could ever realise. And if you're careful to walk in God's ways and trust him, he will use your influence in line with his will and his purpose. And we know that Esther was positioned for such a time as this. And you are positioned for such a time as this in a world and a nation that is scary and uncertain. And you are positioned for a purpose, even if that place that you find yourself in is ordinary, even if it's a place of obscurity or a place of pain or confusion. It might not be the end goal or the end dream. It may be a place you simply don't want to be in, but it's still a place of purpose and a step on your journey. So the next person I'd like to look at is Joseph. And again, most of us will know the story of Joseph, and I think he's great, me. I love how God was able to speak to him through dreams at such a young age. And we can see when we read about Joseph, his immaturity, which I think is brilliant, because it gives me hope that even in our immaturity and our mistakes and our failings, God can use us. And God saw past that and was able to use Joseph in life and through life and circumstances to develop him for a much bigger purpose. So I'd like us to look at Genesis 37, verses 2 to 11. So it says this. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah, the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of corn out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered round mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." And when he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So from this passage, we can see that Joseph is favoured and loved by his father Jacob more than his brothers. And together with his seeming arrogance of his dreams, he doesn't mind sharing with them. It's not hard to see why his brothers dislike him and then sell him into slavery. And I don't want us to be too hard on his brothers, right? Because I was the jealous sibling growing up. And anyone who knows them, know my sister Joanne. To be honest, she should have sold me on eBay when we were younger, if that had been a thing back then. Because she had, can you remember at school? I don't know about you, but you used to get handwriting pens if you did really super handwriting. And we had, it were back in the day, it were a proper cartridge pen. You know, we had the little cartridges and you had to put it in and it had the special nib on it. I've never been able to write with one of them anyway, because they're like posh pens. But I really, really were jealous of our Joanne, because she come home from school with this gorgeous pen and like, "Oh, really? I'm having that." And one day she weren't in her room. I don't know where she were. And I just went into her room like you do. And pen were just there. I thought, yes, I'll have a look at this pen. Just picked it up. Lovely. Nice. Went into the bathroom. And I don't know if you remember fairy soap, when it were green bars with baby on one side and fairy on other. And so I took our Joanne's pen. You're going to think really bad of me, aren't you now? And I took the lid off it and got nib and I stabbed it in that fairy soap. I thought, she's not having a pen if I've not got one. It's not on. But to make it even worse, and I did get smacked off my mum and dad for that. There were many things I did to her, but I think the worst thing, and it should have been a crime, you know, at school we did these little Easter baskets. And while you were in assembly, Easter Bunny had come, right? And he'd put you a Cadbury's cream egg in, and I'm sure they're much smaller these days than they used to be. And we'd both got us little baskets with his egg in and gone home from school. And my mum always used to put his Easter eggs on top of the sideboard. And one morning I'd got up. I don't know where everybody else were. And I'm thinking, I really want my Easter egg, but I'll get done. So I decided what would be a good idea would be to get our Joanne's Easter egg. And I unwrapped the foil off it, just on one bit at the bottom, bit it, oh, it was lovely, and took all creamy bit out, you know, from inside. Then wrapped it back up and put it back upside down, because she'd never noticed that, would she? I were a bit thick, really. So our Joanne's had a tough time with me growing up. And so I totally get where Joseph's brothers are coming from. If, to be honest, I'd been them, I think I'd have sold him into slavery as well. But more serious now, if you've got a dream that God gives you, if he puts something in your heart to do, don't share it with just everybody, because not everybody is going to be wanting to share your dream. Okay? But what I love here is that although Joseph shared it, and it got him in trouble, God was still able to accomplish his plan and his purpose, particularly even using the nasty actions of his brothers. And through those actions, God was able to place Joseph into the hands of the Midianites, which is where he needed him to be, so that he could get him into the house of Potiphar. And when he's in the house of Potiphar, God's with him. So it doesn't matter what seemingly has gone wrong and that doesn't seem right, God's still with Joseph. And through that, God helps Joseph to prosper in the house of Potiphar, and he helps him to learn the skills that he needs for the bigger purpose ahead. So he learns how to govern and how to have leadership over the house of Potiphar, because Potiphar puts him in charge of everything. The thing as well to remember is that when you are in a place and you are doing what God needs you to do and you're learning the skills that he needs you to learn, that you become very attractive. And so be careful, because Joseph was attractive, even to Potiphar's wife. And so you need to be on your guard when God's doing what he needs to do in your life. Be guarded, okay? Ready for anything the enemy might throw at you, to throw you off course, because that is just what he loved to do. And for Joseph, although he was on guard and he was able to escape Potiphar's wife, he still ended up in prison. And although we would look at that and think, that's not ideal. If I got thrown in prison, I think God's lost it, you know, because that is not where I want to be. But to God, it was ideal. And this is what amazes me about God, that he works just so different to us. Because whilst Joseph's in prison, God is able to place Joseph in another position of responsibility. And he is able to teach Joseph how to rise from the ashes again and to find favour again. And maybe someone here just needs to hear that although the place you're in is awful, God can help you to rise from the bottom and to rise from the ashes. And even better than that, he exchanges your ashes for a crown of beauty. And he will give you the oil of gladness for mourning and a garment of praise for a spirit of despair. And he wants you to know his favour in your life once again. Now Joseph, through time in that prison, met a cupbearer and a baker in prison. And that's all part of God's plan. So I'd like us to just look at Genesis chapter 40, verses 1 to 23. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials and the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the same prison where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended them. So you see already, God's just working out everything perfectly. And after they'd been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. When Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw how they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in the master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" "We both had dreams," they answered, "but there is no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream, and he said to him, "In my dream, I saw a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches, and as soon as it budded, it blossomed, and its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and put the cup in his hand." "This is what it means," Joseph said to him. "The three branches are 3 days, and within 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well with you, remember me, show me kindness, mention me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this prison. For I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." And when the chief baker saw that Joseph had given a favourable interpretation, he said to Joseph, "I too had a dream, and on my head were three baskets of bread. In the top basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." "And this is what it means," Joseph said. "The three baskets are 3 days, and within 3 days Pharaoh will lift off your head and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat away your flesh." Now the third day was Pharaoh's birthday, and he gave a feast for all his officials. He lifted up the heads of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker in the presence of his officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position so that he once again put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph has said to them in his interpretation. The chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. So despite everything that Joseph had been through, he's still hearing from God, able to interpret dreams. I think that's cracking, to be under that kind of pressure and living in that kind of way in a prison and still able to be used by God, still able to hear God. And this is great, because then obviously God's just perfecting this gift within him for a much bigger purpose later on. Now the interpretations that Joseph gave came true. And we see that the chief cupbearer was promoted back to his position. But here's the thing that struck me, that he forgot Joseph, after all Joseph had done, and after everything that God did restoring the cupbearer back to his position, he still forgot Joseph. And you might be in a situation in your life, and in your work life, or in your home life, or somewhere else, and you've been passed by, and you've been forgotten by your family, or your boss, or your colleagues. And you might feel, because of that, for some reason, God might have forgotten you. But let me encourage you that whilst others may forget you, God does not forget you. He has still got a plan and a purpose for you. So stay the path and be patient and wait for him, because he's the one who opens doors. He's the one who leads us, and he's the one who's got every step planned to detail, and he has not forgotten you. And I know that there are some situations that can leave us wondering just what on earth is God doing. And I know I've said it before, there's that scripture and it says that God's ways are not our ways. And I tell God constantly, you know, because obviously I think I should, what he's doing wrong, or what he could do better, or how much more quicker and more effective he could do things. But bizarrely enough, God does not need my help, and he never listens to me, thankfully. So in the fullness of time, we see that Joseph is remembered by the cupbearer. And Pharaoh himself sends for Joseph because he's had a dream and he needs someone to interpret it. And I don't think it's any mistake that nobody else, all the usual people that would be able to do that for Pharaoh, are unable to do it. But the thing is, it was 2 years that had gone by before the cupbearer remembered Joseph. Could you imagine being passed over for a promotion at work and waiting 2 whole years to be remembered? Could you imagine others being promoted ahead of you, or even worse still, getting the credit for the work that you've done? What if you were in a situation that was a million miles away from where you want to be and from the dream that God's placed in your heart, and it takes years for the doors to open and for things to start to happen? How patient would you be? What would you do? You see, Joseph is used by God to interpret the dream for Pharaoh. And even more than this, God's able to use Joseph and promote him at just the right time to save a nation. And God leads the Israelites into Egypt to provide for them for 7 years of famine. And this is when we see the fulfillment of Joseph's dream. And he's reunited with his family, and they come and they bow down at his feet. And we read later on that after Joseph had died and his family had died, that there was a new king. And this new king didn't even know who Joseph was, or what he'd done, or what role and position he'd held. And the Israelites had become great in number and prospered in Egypt. And so the new king was afraid of them, and he began to oppress them. And I find it really interesting that God leads in everything that happened to Joseph. He still had this plan for the Israelites, and he was going to provide for them. So he led them in to Egypt to provide for them. And then when things got difficult, the same place that was the place of provision and refuge became the place that would hurt the Israelites. So God sent Moses, and he led them out at just the right time. And so God works on a different canvas to us. He sees a much bigger picture to us, and he sees what we cannot see. And he always has a plan and a purpose. And just like he had a plan for the Israelites and for Joseph, and using Egypt in that, he has a plan for us. So I know I always like to get a little story in about Jim, and it's no different. But this one's a nice one. I know you're all a bit shocked, aren't you? And it's one that makes me particularly proud of him. And I do love him. Now, I don't want any sick noises, all right, because it's not going to happen again. We don't want him getting a big head. But back in 2008, we just had Katie. And to be honest, I thought I was good at being a mother till Katie came along. And she was one of them babies that wouldn't feed. And she cried all the time. And she wouldn't sleep. And to be honest, I was like an absolute zombie. And Jim would come home from work, and he did the worst thing any fella could do. He'd go to bed. We call him Nap Man in our house for a reason. And I know, it is going to get good. It's going to make him look good in a minute. But the thing for Jim was that at that time he was dealing with the recession at work. It was really beginning to hit hard and it was just going really wrong. And it was so bad that he knew that they were going to go bust. There was no doubt about it. And there was a particular point in that process that they'd got a meeting at work and they'd called in. It was the different bank managers that had an invested interest in the company, and they were coming for a meeting with the directors. And Jim knew that they were going to shut them down that day. And but instead of giving up and thinking, oh, it's a foregone conclusion, Jim did what he does best. And he sat down and he strategically planned a way through. And this is his forte. This is what he's exceptionally good at. And he got to work that day for the meeting and they're all sat round, and the other directors, the people who own the company, had sort of said their bit, oh, you know, please don't do this to us. And then Jim got up and did a bit of a presentation and said, look, this is what I think could work. And he talked them through it. Now, anyone who knows my Jim knows that is not easy. He does not like to speak in front of people. He does not like to be seen or heard. But when he's in his job mode, and after he'd finished, he sat down and the guy who was the main sort of bank manager who got the biggest interest in the company sat there and he looked at Jim and he says, you know, I'd come for one purpose today, and that was to shut this company down. But I just feel that there's something about you that I like. There's something about you that I can trust. And I like your plan. So we're not going to do that. We're going to support you and see if we can't make this plan work. And I just think that's brilliant. And I think that Jim found favour that day, not just with God, but in the eyes of man. I think God caused that bank manager to see what God sees. And obviously they're still going. But there was a lot riding on it that day, because if they'd have shut them down, it wasn't just us that would have lost our home. And had to resort our whole lives out. But there were 50 other families that day that would have also lost their jobs and their income. And so it's just amazing what God can do. Yeah. And I think that the plan obviously worked. And since then, the same bank manager has actually said to Jim, you know, it's you we like and it's you we support. And I think that's just an incredible testimony of what God can do through individuals. And I believe that no matter where you are, no matter how difficult a situation, that you can find favour in God's eyes and in the eyes of man when you live walking with him. So the last person I'd like to look at this morning is Jesus. And no one knows more about being positioned for a purpose than Jesus, because he's the Son of the living God. And yet he left his position in heaven to come to earth with the best rescue plan that there was ever made. And he positioned himself here with us, and he did loads of amazing things that challenged people and still challenges even today. But for me, in my opinion, there's never been a moment that's had more purpose than when Christ positioned himself on the cross. So I'd like us to read John chapter 19. Verses 17-30. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus, carrying his own cross. He went out to the place of skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha. And here they crucified him, and with him two others, one on each side and Jesus in the middle. Pilate had a notice prepared and fastened to the cross, and it read, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. Many of the Jews read this sign, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city. And the sign was written in Aramaic, Latin, and Greek. The chief priests of the Jews protested to Pilate, "Do not write the King of the Jews, but that this man claimed to be the King of the Jews." Pilate answered, "I have written what I have written." And when the soldiers crucified Jesus, they took his clothes, dividing them into four shares, one for each of them, with the undergarment remaining. This garment was seamless, woven in one piece from top to bottom. "Let's not tear it," they said to one another. "Let's decide by lot who will get it." This happened that the scripture might be fulfilled, which said, "They divided my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing." So this is what the soldiers did. And near the cross of Jesus stood his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. And when Jesus saw his mother there, and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Dear woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." And from that time on, this disciple took her into his home. Later, knowing that all was now completed, and so that scripture would be fulfilled, Jesus said, "I'm thirsty." A jar of wine vinegar was there, so they soaked a sponge in it, put the sponge on a stalk of the hyssop plant, and lifted it to Jesus' lips. And when he had received the drink, Jesus said, "It is finished." And with that, he bowed his head and gave up his spirit. So the cross was a place of pure agony and pain, and everything appeared to be over, and that evil had won over good. And it appeared as though there was only one possible outcome. But through the death of Jesus, he was able to take the keys of death and hell. And he made a way to reconcile us to God. And then he rose again in victory. And maybe the place you're in is the worst possible place. And maybe you can only see one outcome. And it may be that your place is a place of pain. A place where God wants to use what you're learning in that place of pain to help somebody else who's going through something similar. You see, Jim's stepmom, Christine, lost her first husband through an horrendous accident abroad. And even now she'll say to you, "I've never got over that. Never got over that." And her GP has referred her for counselling, and she won't take it, she won't go for it. And her reason is that she doesn't want to speak to somebody who doesn't know what it's like to go through what she's been through. And I think that that's why sometimes God's he takes what we go through, because he's making us into the right type of counsellor that somebody's going to need. And maybe God wants to use you to be that right counsellor for someone. And remember, even what others think of you, they might think you failed or that God's not with you. But Jesus is with you. Always. Even in those difficult places. And what I find in the Bible, and it says, Jesus endured the cross for the joy set before him. What does that mean? It's a bit of a strange thing, isn't it, to sort of understand. You see, the cross was without a doubt a place of endurance as well as a place of pain. And through the endurance, Jesus was able to see the joy set before him. And maybe in the place that you're in, you need to just see beyond the place and see the joy set before you. There's a classic film that I love, and it's called Chariots of Fire. And it's based on the true story of the life of Eric Liddell, an Olympic runner who, I love the bit at the end where he's running his race. He'd refused to run on Sundays because of being a Christian. And he took some flak for that. And it's the end of the film, and he's running his Olympic race. And when he runs a race, there's a point in the race where obviously he's going through it, he's enduring it, and he knows that he's got it. And his head goes back and he smiles. And he says that that's when he can feel God's pleasure. And so I was thinking about this joy set before you. There's got to be a point in our place that we're in and in our endurance where we can feel God's pleasure. When we know that even in our place of pain, he is pleased with us just for keeping going. And I believe that's possible. I've not fathomed it out. I've not cracked that. I don't know how to do that yet. But I believe that when we're in those places of endurance and of pain, that God is pleased with us and that he looks at us with pleasure. There's the lyrics of a song that's called As It Is. And it says this, I will sing like a man with no sickness in my body, like no prison walls can hold me. I will sing like I am free. And it's not that we live ignorant of the place that we're in, but it's that we can worship and live as a person who is free because we are. You see, Joseph was in prison, but he was free. He was free to be used by God and for God to accomplish his plan and his purpose, not just in Joseph's life, but in the life of a nation. And so prison, that doesn't stop God. It doesn't keep him hemmed in. God can move and you are free, even in a place that feels like a prison. And Jesus was free. He might have been on the cross, but he was free. He was free to lay his life down when he was ready to lay it down. Nobody took it from him. I don't believe for a minute that the cross was enough to take Jesus' life. I believe Jesus laid it down because he had it all power and all authority. And the great thing is that we know that Jesus is risen again. And Jesus was free to rise again. And he has conquered death and hell. And the devil may have thought he'd won, but in fact the cross was his undoing. He was defeated by a king who positioned himself for a purpose on the cross. And that purpose was to accomplish our salvation and to crush the enemy in the same, you know, in the same move as well, which is just amazing. Now for me, I know I sort of shared with Pastor that I felt like it's been a bit of a strange place the last few years in my life. I felt like it's a bit of what I call no man's land. I didn't really fit anywhere, and I didn't have a job, and I've been very unsure of what God's doing and where he's taking me, and I've been waiting for some direction and a door to open, and I've had to trust when there's been nothing to hold on to except the truth that God has a plan, and I'm positioned in a place of uncertainty for a purpose. And in all honesty, when I prepared this message, I've been unemployed for just over 2 years, and I'd just failed to get a job that I'd been interviewed for that I really thought was in the bag. And I was particularly feeling low. But then God, I love it, but God. And I received a phone call a few weeks after sort of putting this together, and without a shadow of a doubt, God's just swung open a door, and I've now got a job. And yeah, it's great and it's wonderful, but I see it, when I look at it, I see that now some of the dreams and the things that God's put in my heart to do, this is a training ground. This job is going to be a training ground for me to learn what he wants me to learn for a much bigger purpose. And you see, what I needed was perspective. You see, on location, 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 Phil and Kirsty show people homes. To people that need quite often completely redoing, rewiring, new heating, perhaps walls knocking down, maybe there's damp issues and construction problems. And they try to help people see the potential of the home that they're showing them and how it can be a home and not just a house. And if we allow God to help us gain perspective, we can see a different picture. And there are those buyers that are unable to see the potential or the smaller steps on the property ladder that will ultimately get them to the bigger dream. And they fail to make their budgets and reality to match their dream. Smaller steps, location and potential are just not on their radar. But there are those who take on board the advice and begin to see the possibilities of where they are and where they can be on their property ladder. Can you see the potential of where you are, of where God's placed you at the moment, and what God can do with you in the place that you're in? Okay, and it might be that right now you can't, so don't lose heart, don't be discouraged, because if you're in a place of uncertainty, just listen to these lyrics, these are cracking. It says, slow down, take time, breathe in, he said. He'd reveal what's to come. The thoughts in his mind, always higher than mine, he'll reveal all to come. Take courage, my heart, stay steadfast, my soul. He's in the waiting, he's in the waiting. Hold on to your hope as your triumph unfolds. He's never failing. He's never failing. So take courage this morning where you are and hold on. He is in the waiting, and he's in the place that you are in with you. There is a purpose to where you are.